It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
We're back. Quarter number two of the Keystone Kickoff Show. Dustin Hawkinsmith, Jim Galante here, back from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. Still talking Penn State, Purdue. Penn State wins 35-7. They're 5-0. Everything's good, right? Not so much. I think there's some worry in everybody. And I think what you mentioned earlier, Jim, is expectations being high. There's really no middle ground when it comes to fans. And this isn't Penn State fans. These are college football fans. You're either disgruntled or you're entitled. You're disgruntled, you're entitled. You know, when things are going good, they're never going good enough. You know, when they're going bad, they're never going to go good again. And so it's good to be in this category where things are going well, but not well enough for your, you know, now lofty standards. And I get it. I think when you see Penn State perform the way it's performed in some of these games against Maryland in particular, set the bar really high, came out strong against Purdue. And then whenever you do have some little blips on the radar, you're concerned. And I get that. But, you know, as we kind of discussed earlier, I don't think it's anything to really get too carried away with.
No, it isn't. What the positive spin on this team has been good enough to set that level of expectation.
Yeah, and I think they deserve it. So we left out the previous segment talk about the running backs, and I think, you know, James Franklin has had to face this question. I think to an annoying part, you know, it's beyond the point of being annoying for him, but it's been a fair question each and every week because four running back rotation is not a conventional setup. I don't think it's a lasting setup. I don't think it's a long-term solution. I don't know that there's really a way to mix and match these guys where everybody's effective and everybody's content. That is a hard math equation, and it's something you're going to have to carry with. Like, at some point in time, you're going to have to kind of prioritize one back or another. I do suspect, just reading between the lines of what he had to say, and we'll hear from James. We'll make sure we get to this quote next quarter. I think they're about ready to assess that. The way that he was speaking about the running back rotation after the game, it wasn't dismissive. It was we're going to have to watch the film. I can't sit here and say right now, there's an opening here.
It sounded like he wants to make a change. And he's already shown he would change the pecking order. He did bump Journey Brown above Ricky Slade.
And he shared that with all of us before he absolutely needed to. I'm proud of him for that.
Yes. So I think it is time for a change. Now, there's much more to the team to talk about. But before we do, I did want to ask you this question. They go by, it was Journey Brown for the first two drives, Ricky Slade for the next two. Shouldn't they at least think about, hey, it's third and short. Maybe this is a good time to have Noah Cain in the game. It's third and long. Maybe this is a good time for Ricky Slade or Devin Ford as a potential receiver or explosive player. Should they be looking at that?
I mean, it seems to make sense, right? Anytime you make a personnel adjustment based on game situation, which they don't seem to be too open to doing, you do tip your hand potentially, but in the chess match or the gamesmanship of calling your offensive plays and adjusting to their adjustments, you know, you can always bring a Noah Cain in and do play action, or you could bring Noah Cain in, do an RPO and run with Chung. There's a lot of stuff you can do off of the defense's expectations. I just don't think they get that hyper focused on little personnel adjustments based on a game situation like that. Right or wrong, I think that's just where they are.
If it's third and short, fourth and short, I think I want Noah Cain in there. I feel like if you're going to run between the tackles, he's the guy I want doing.
But he's proven it again and again and again.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, we had this discussion just about bringing Noah Cain in as your fourth quarter, your closer, your finisher. There's some substance to that when the defense is tired and all that. But I guess my point to that would be, you can make the case for anybody. You can say, okay, if Noah Kane's my most punishing runner, if he's the guy who's really going to be grinding out yardage for me, which he definitely appears to be, then you use that for 1, 2, and 3 quarters, and you can bring in your more explosive guys, long range, you know, long distance speed type guys. You can go either way. So I do think we're going to start to see some kind of shift. Whether that's listed on the depth chart or whether that's, you know, seeing Noah Kane earlier in the game, you know, I don't think they're going to get away from four running backs just yet. But I think, you know, Noah Kane has definitely earned the right with that consistent play of his. Just steady, consistent.
We're not going to have to wait 5 series before Noah Kane comes in the game.
No. And what's interesting is that Journey Brown hasn't done anything to earn a demotion of any kind.
No, he hasn't.
Devin Ford has, I think you can make the case that he deserves more run too. Ricky Slade, maybe he's a game away. I don't know. Maybe through 5 games, we haven't seen a lot of daylight for him in the running game where the other guys seem to have found that. So we'll see. But I do think we're going to start to see a shift starting at Iowa this
week. There was a group on the other side of the ball that played pretty well, though.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, 10 sacks, a sack shy of the school record for that, you know, that pass rush was you knew Purdue struggled to run the ball anyway coming in. That was one of the things that Jeff Brohm and those guys were trying to figure out, how to bring that dimension to the offense. They were a pass-heavy offense, one-dimensional, even with a backup quarterback. And then you add in the big lead, and you know it was just time for these guys to tee off. I don't know. I mean, do you take this 10 sacks and be like, okay, that's definitely going to play against Iowa, definitely going to play against Michigan, definitely going to play against Ohio State? I it's not that I dismiss it, I guess, but you know, you want to see this show up in big games, and I'm not sure having 10 sacks against Purdue proves anything to me that this pass rush is ready for prime time against some of these better teams.
Well, it doesn't mean they're going to get 10 sacks against Iowa or Michigan or Ohio State, but what it does show is Shaka Toney had an incredible game, and I loved, I guess it was his third sack, where he just beat that tackle so badly with quickness, and he set him up and then went inside for the sack. But there were a couple other things that I took note of that I thought were interesting on defense that really didn't get mentioned. I only noticed this on the replay. When I watched the tape of the game, I start freeze frame going through it when there's a sack or a big play to see what happened. Jason Owe did a couple really nice things that went unnoticed. There was I think it was the Fred Hansard sack, where Owe beat his man that forced the quarterback to step up right into Hansard.
Right.
There was another play when it was obvious Purdue was, hey, this team is rushing us so fast coming in, let's try to take advantage of that, perhaps setting up screen passes. And on the one where they ended up screening to the left side, they looked right first, a running back release for a screen pass. Owe saw it very quickly and dropped in the coverage with them. It wasn't that young guy mistake where he's rushing like crazy. He did fall back into coverage, and there was no play there. The quarterback had to look elsewhere. I thought that really stuck out to me.
And to think that Penn State is at this point, you know, without a lot of contribution from Owe, and I always think, you know, I think anytime, and Iowa's defense is like this too, that's what kind of reminded me, but anytime you can put up a big number and it's so evenly distributed among players defensively, I think that maybe is the most encouraging sign of all. Like, you know, Shaka Toney got his, and clearly he was a handful, and he's always going to be a handful for some people. And I thought James Franklin's quote about Shaka Toney and you know, the football side of it, not just the quickness. We'll hear that coming up soon, but everybody got in on the act.
Yes.
And it's just kind of what you mentioned. You know, when you're posing a giant threat on the perimeter, they're trying to adjust and account for that and making sure they're not getting abused by the most obvious danger to their quarterback, which were these defensive ends. And then you get the defensive tackles involved, you know, Hansard and Windsor and Shelton, they all got involved too.
Well, the other play that I only noticed in watching the replay, again, pausing when I saw sacks, was on Matos' sack when he circled around.
Yeah.
The running back, who you think should have been picking him up, slid over to help out on Shaka Tony. They doubled him up.
Right.
Guess what? You know, when you're doubling Shaka Tony, look, here comes Matos.
This is a formula that Penn State would love, is for opponents to be so afraid of Shaka Tony that they don't double Yetur Gross-Matos.
Right.
That would be, I think, the best case scenario. And I do think, you know, and I'm not, you know, getting 10 sacks against a Purdue team that fell behind, I'm not as impressed by the sacks as I am, you know, the pressure that came from everywhere. And that includes, you know, the way that Micah Parsons has been used, not just in this game, but all year round. Six tackles for loss now. I would venture a guess that that's more than he had last year already.
Probably.
The utilization of a guy like that is exactly where what I was hoping. And his sack, by the way, where he, you know, the running back tried to go low on him. And he, like, that's a sack that Micah Parsons and very few others could have gotten there.
He earned it. The offense misplayed it. How about Lamont Wade? And on the during the game, you said, boy, he seems to be everywhere.
He's everywhere.
He's aggressive. And then I looked at the stat sheet, which just confirmed that, didn't it?
He sure was. 11 tackles led the way. He had a sack, too, where he came off the edge and really ran free on that. But I do think Lamont is you know, he's got some tone-setting potential for this defense. I think there's a few guys who have some tone-setting potential, but I think they really love his energy, and he plays with that energy, too. He is everywhere. Physical presence, you know, I think that, you know, as the season's gone on, I think he started to play better and better, and this clearly was a career game for him.
It looks like he's playing with confidence. Obviously, with enthusiasm, he's playing quicker.
He does
quicker.
Everything with confidence and enthusiasm.
And you know what? I know there's this Penn State tradition, we're the humble team, and so I don't know, but I like when guys celebrate a bit when they make a play. I don't want you to celebrate when the receiver caught the ball, gained 40 yards, and you start jumping up and down because you made the tackle after 40 yards.
Right.
But Lamont Wade, he was making plays. Hey, celebrate. I'm in the stand celebrating with you.
There's 105,000 people watching every move that you're making down there. You know, seasons rest on individual plays. They win 35-7. Right. So that's but you know what I mean? Like, a lot is riding on these things. There's a lot of pressure on these things. If you come through in any situation, if you get a sack on third down, I don't think it's anti-tradition at all to say celebrate that. You know, you have put in so many hours to this. These fans are ready to skewer you if you do something bad. Celebrate when you do something good. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. We're not done talking Penn State Purdue. We're going to start hearing from James Franklin, his post-game press conference. We'll break that down in just a moment.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves, fantasy football, flannel, beards, tailgating, oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Hey, it's Ross Tucker, former NFL player and now host on the Keystone Sports Network, telling you about GoPSURV.com. I had an unbelievable experience for the Wisconsin game with my wife. My father-in-law came up. We had an absolute blast tailgating at GoPSURV.com. If you don't know about it or you haven't checked it out yet, you need to do so immediately. Call Mark at 1-800-519-8467 or go to GoPSURV.com.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.